In on Canuck Central here in the Kintec studio, Dan Riccio and Bick Nizar. Bick in for Sat today. The Calgary Flames, who are by point percentage in the lead for the Western wildcard race because they've only played 65 games. They're 2 points back of the Canucks and Blues in the standing. So they've got the Maple Leafs tonight, and then I believe they've got the New York Rangers tomorrow. So they've got a busy schedule upcoming, but a big one for Calgary tonight.
They've had a light schedule, though, too.
Yeah,
they've
had a light one lately.
The 8th and then the 12th,
yeah,
getting ready for that Vancouver game. And then they had another 3 days here between the 14th and the 17th.
But look, you can look at it a different way, and now they've got...
No, I'm only looking at it my way. Don't even say your facts over there.
They've got, what, 17 games in probably 34 days, 33 days, something like that, before the end of the season. So essentially a game every other night for the next...
I think there's only 31 days left in the season.
Okay, so more than a game every other night for the remainder of the season. We're doing a little bit of a crowdsourcing here.
Wait, are you going to do it?
Answer this question.
No, we can't do this on the radio.
What's the best part of waking up? What?
So stupid.
I'm curious what people are going to answer at the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox.
There's no, like, context provided to it.
Nope. But in the limited crowdsourcing we've done here...
Literally the first text was the correct answer.
Okay, so there you go. What's the best part of waking up? 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Please, keep it PG. It's Dan Riccio, Bick Nizar. It's the Open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
So we were right in this crowdsourcing. Anyways.
Oh, my goodness.
The Open on Canucks Central is where we bring in the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Latest is Canucks lost to Utah last night. 3-1 the final in what was another punchless effort for the Vancouver Canucks. The offense... just not really there. They do not score a 5-on-5 goal on the night. Per natural stat trick, they had just 3 high danger chances at 5-on-5 yesterday. And despite getting 6 minutes of power play time in the third period, could not convert to help them in what wasn't really a must-win game, but one that would have really hurt Utah's chances of pushing for the playoffs. So you allow Utah to stay in it. And I don't want to give the Canucks the tired excuse, but I can't completely remove the 4 games in 6 nights, 2 back-to-backs in the same week part of the equation when it came to how I viewed this game.
Yeah, I mostly agree, but then how do you explain Saturday?
Saturday, they was not a competitive team they were going against.
Okay, but they didn't, again, 6 goals, but it's on 15 shots.
Yes.
It's not like they played a high tempo.
They looked like,
wow, they really overwhelmed Chicago.
They look like the Canuck Trotters out there, okay? The way they were passing the puck around the Chicago Blackhawks, who were completely inept defensively.
Yeah, but it didn't have the same like urgency. I thought maybe after watching Saturday, I thought, okay, you know what? They conserved their energy. Mm-hmm. They did the job.
Yes.
And yeah, a couple of highlights. But I thought that was the type of performance on Saturday that set you up for success on Sunday. That's how you combat the back-to-back, knowing that a big game is on the horizon.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, look, back-to-backs are challenging.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's not just the back-to-back. It's the previous.
It's the 4-6.
Yes. Yeah.
throwing a travel day in there with Calgary, you know, and all that.
And there was, it's like, it's, you know, they had a 3-4 they played last Sunday, then go Tuesday, Wednesday, and now another 3-4 here when they play on Tuesday against Winnipeg. So it's a very heavy schedule. Everybody's got a heavy schedule. The other part that makes me want to not play the fatigue card as much either is that they did have the 6 minutes of power play time in the third period.
That's the thing.
You know, this is, if there's a playbook for how you can overcome the odds in a back-to-back situation or a fourth game and six nights situation, it's when you have that kind of power play opportunity in a close game to level the playing field. But the Canucks power play was, I know they scored the only goal on the night. It was a favorable bounce that allowed them to score that goal. But that power play just ain't it for me.
And they scored it in the manner in which Rick Tocchet had criticisms.
Yes.
For what the power play looked like in the third period.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quick up by Elias Pettersson to Jake DeBrusk. He gets the quick entry. He shoots. Rebound pops all the way out to Pettersson, who's now entered the zone. And it's quickly to Queen, who's up top. And he notices 2-on-1 in front of the net. Just shoot it. There's going to be a free stick there. Someone can tip it. There's your opportunity. And it goes off Sergachev's glove and into the net. So fortunate bounce. But it's a look that I'm sure they're always looking for. Numbers in front of the net. Worst case scenario, we get a rebound. Or I guess worst case scenario is Vejbelka gloves it and it's over. But the hope is tip, rebound. We have a free body there. And with two guys who are very qualified net front, DeBrusk and Besser, go create that. And he had a lot of complaints about what it looked like in the third period. Essentially pinned the result on what the power play was in the third period. Man, I don't know if I agree with the assessment of like, oh, there were a lot of plays there for us and we just didn't make them.
Okay, so here's what Bick is referencing from Rick Tocchet. Here's what he had to say post-game about the Canucks power play and some of the options that he felt were there that the players did not execute on the ice.
You go down low, and we have a 3-on-2 or 3-on-1. It's plain as day. It's been told. You know, we're a little frustrated, the coach staff, because when you go hard up high, the puck has to go low. It's, you got to make a play. It's there. So, I think we're a little bummed out about that.
So there is Rick Tocchet putting it on the execution of the players. More so than the strategizing that they go through as a group in practice or video sessions, whatever that may be. And I know that there's people that probably don't like Rick Tocchet putting it on the players and not taking some accountability on him and the coaching staff. But leave that aside, Bick and I went through the 6 minutes of power play opportunity.
I've tried to watch it like 3 times now.
We watched it again before the show today together. How many of those opportunities that Rick Tocchet speaks of are actually there for the Canucks to go like from the high position with Utah pressuring up high in the zone? Where's the opportunity for them to go low?
Well, like, first of all, get set up.
Yeah.
That was a struggle in its own.
To me, that's still the biggest issue with the power play. It has nothing to do with their in zone. It's more, you can't get enough clean entries to really get set up often and well enough to really put that kind of pressure on the opponent.
The entire 6 minutes, like maybe
mm-hmm.
3 opportunities.
Yeah.
And like, we're stretching here. It's like, oh, this guy has to go make a play to go make this play. Not like clear and obvious, pass it to this guy. This guy can shoot.
Yes.
Like, it felt like some work to find these opportunities.
Yes.
that he's talking about. Now, that's also on the players. You had 6 minutes to come up with a goal, change the fortunes of that game. Can you create something better? Of course. But I don't know. I didn't see as much as open opportunities that Rick Tocchet is referencing there.
Yeah. There's a couple of issues. And the biggest one is still the entries. You know, that the start of the 4-minute double minor that goes against Utah for the high stick on Brock Besser. They lose the opening faceoff and then they can't get any entries. The first minute of the power play is completely gone without anything, any semblance of a sniff at goal. They don't get anything until the second unit comes on and Lekkerimäki finds Myers for what's probably the best opportunity of the entire double minor.
Some courage by Lekkerimäki to take the puck through the middle of the ice, force McBain one way, I'll dash the other way. He loses his stick on that, McBain does. Finds the entry, finds the angle, and hits Myers as the trailer. And yeah, that was probably the best chance on the four-minute power play is your second unit D-man getting the best opportunity.
Tyler Myers, who's been a bit of an offensive savant lately, I will say.
He's in form.
But that's not exactly the look you'd really want if you're the Canucks in that situation. The other issue here, so the power play, because Besser is still getting work done on his bleeding lip for the start of the double minor, he is not able to start that opening the opening part of the 4 minute double minor, and he doesn't really get a ton of time with the top unit because of that through that whole stretch. And so I'm watching it, and Utah's worried about two players on the ice. They're worried about Quinn Hughes, and they're worried about Elias Pettersson. Like, Connor Garland's done some really good things for the team this year, but it's been an ongoing discussion with us about his use on the power play. He's good at retrievals. He does some things really well. He's been pretty good at the net front because he's just finds a way to get to pucks and out-battle people in those situations. So he has had scored a couple of power play goals this year, a few power play goals this year. But, like, he's not a threat. There is nothing for the opposition to worry about other than shading towards Pettersson in his one-timer spot or making sure Hughes doesn't dance around everybody and really create an open shooting lane. And to me, that's the other big issue that the Canucks power play unit has, that I don't think the players have a ton of options to go to in terms of finding the solution and execution to be able to play through that, because, I mean, it is what it is. These are the two guys that are the most dangerous parts of your power play right now.
And especially with Pettersson, like, he doesn't have a shooting radius like, say, Ovi, right? Like, Ovi, you
the
can send
stick,
him a bad pass, and he's going to quickly shuffle his feet, and he's willing to get any shot off.
Line A, Ovi, like some of the classical one-timer guys on the power play.
But it doesn't matter if it's front foot. It doesn't matter if it's way back in the back foot, beyond their own frame. Like, they're going to do whatever they can to just get a shot off. Pettersson wants it in a very specific spot. So the window for someone like Quinn Hughes to pass to is a bit smaller. So as you're shading as a defender, You're trying to protect a much smaller window than with Ovi. It's like you almost have to go individually cover him to prevent him to score. But you're not going to do that because then you're just providing 4-on-3. And that's why everyone's like, why not just cover Ovi? You know what's going there. It's part of the seduction to, like, hey, should I go there or should I stay here? And it's the constant bind you're put in as a PKer. But with Pettersson, like, it's a smaller window to aim for, and he's going to defer sometimes. And so it makes it easier to just angle that off.
Yeah.
And there's no threat elsewhere. And so when Garland, like, we've seen at different moments this season, like, teams have just played 4-on-4 and Garland just on his own.
Yeah.
Like, if he gets it, we'll rotate, but, like, go ahead.
Yeah.
Shoot it from
kind of like basketball, like, leave the guy who can't shoot.
Tony Allen, right? Yeah. Bruce Bowen, Bick Nazar, just leave that guy open.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, just do that. And you look at his ice time this year as far as power play, it's 90 seconds higher than it was previous seasons.
Yeah, he was always on the second unit before.
Yeah. And he's playing essentially two more minutes this season than he was last season.
Yeah.
And his overall scoring rate is lower than it was in his first season, which was his best season here. He's going to have to put some work to get even to 50 points this year.
Yeah.
This is the issues here. These are the issues that show themselves up here. And 650, I see this one coming in here. I'm just like, I'm tired of Garland on the power play.
Yeah.
It feels like it's 4-on-4 because he's not a threat, because he's always on the half wall for some reason. And his goals have all come net front, back door essentially, or rebounds. But yeah, they don't have options in general.
No. The only option would be Lekkerimäki to put in that spot. You know, I'd keep DeBrusk at the net front. I'd keep Besser on the top unit and maybe put Lekkerimäki there. but then maybe you lose something on your retrievals if Garland's not there. But that might just be something you have to try. Otherwise, there isn't really, and Tuck addressed this as well last night in saying there's not really any other options. Like, you know, you're trying to get Besser going. You're not going to take him off the top power play unit. So there's that part of the conversation. Lekker-Mäki is the only guy on the second unit that I'd really have a ton of interest in seeing, you know, like maybe that's the one personnel thing I would change about how they went into that double minor is instead of having Pew Suter with Besser getting worked on, maybe you start with Lekker-Mäki in that spot, also a right hand shot instead of a left hand shot. So it doesn't change a ton of probably what you were practicing ahead of the games and all that. The bottom line is you lost Miller and it wasn't working earlier this year. It wasn't working towards the end of last year anyways, but you lost Miller and you lost one of your two power play quarterbacks. And I think that's one of your big issues. When Hedl gets back, and hopefully that's sooner rather than later, hoping he's okay. But I think that's an option to help with your entries on the top unit. I just, with what they currently have, they don't have a ton of options to help this power play, because for me, the biggest issue is that you have two threats on the Canucks power play from a shooting perspective, and it's easy for teams to take that away.
And technically, they should have four.
Mm-hmm.
Besser and DeBrusk are shooters.
Yeah.
But they play net front, bumper, goal line.
Yeah.
That's essentially the space that they operate.
And there's not enough rotation in order to get those guys in the shooting spots.
The other guys, like, if you're going to take your two best shooters, and we're sitting here like, oh, there's no options here. It's like Sherwood played on the power play last mm-hmm. night.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Kiefer Sherwood. I know we're going to talk about him later. I like what he said and all that. Man, these are the options we're talking about. Joshua struggling this year.
Yep.
Which, like, I have all the time in the world. Like, I understand why he may be struggling. Like, you have, like, third-line options here. So if the solution is then, oh, we have net front guys and that's all we really have right now, you should be launching pucks all of the time
yeah.
to create that, not just, hey, let's wait.
You should almost have the highest shooting rate, shot attempt rate in the league on the power play.
They had 5 shots on goal
yeah.
in the power play in the third period mm-hmm. in 6 minutes.
Yeah.
9 attempts, I think.
Yeah.
Not which good. Is like, it sounds like a lot, but no, it needs to be way more.
Yeah.
If your whole strategy is we have numbers down low, then the puck should just be finding its way there all of the time, and it does not.
No. And it's an issue because you're going to need that power play to close down a playoff spot. Canucks Central roundup. Quickly, a couple of things Canucks did not practice or anything today coming off the back-to-back over the course of the weekend. So it was a full team day off. Update on the Leafs and Flames. Leafs with an early 1-0 lead thanks to Max Domi. That game just getting started. Flames are 2 points back with 2 games in hand on the Canucks and Blues for the second wild card. The Blues are level on points after they had a couple of wins over the weekend, so they won both of their back-to-backs in pretty nice fashion as well. 2-win weekend for them. Blues Canucks on Thursday in St. Louis, and Blues have, I think, the most favorable schedule in the league by the metrics, and including the next little stretch here, they've got 3 of their next 6 games against Nashville, and also one of those games is against Chicago. So not guaranteed win night, but games that the Blues definitely should have. Wanted to leave some time for the Kiefer Sherwood comment on Jason Dickinson not coming back onto the ice after he buried Filip Hedl on Saturday. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the program. Coming up next, as we got to hit the break, Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly.
Wait, we're not going to explain what you did at the start of this?
Oh, yes. I probably should, especially since it flooded the text box because everybody knew I was talking. You didn't think people would know.
I just thought without any context,
I said it's like
odd.
It's one of the most iconic jingles in advertising history.
That would have been so funny if you guys mentioned it. Never just came back.
Yeah, Reach in the break was singing it.
Yeah,
and I was on my phone.
I saw the commercial. Yeah. Even though the TVs are on mute, I was just like, I started singing the jingle.
I was on my phone, like not paying attention. I was like, hey, yeah. Were you singing the Folgers jingle? Which, like, hey, fair play. It is, like, one of the best jingles.
Yeah. David Langley, though, with a good alternative. The best part of waking up is Spro in your cup. That's right. Yeah.
There you go.
more so.
I like how you read it even in the jingle tone.
Yeah.
It's impossible just to say it.
It's impossible. Some other funny options coming in at the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox.
Some of them we can't read.
Yeah. So probably best to leave that there where it is. All right. Coming up, Don Taylor joining us next on Canuck Central.